Pastor Mai, good evening and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, Middle MHK Bill Shimmons has defended his decision to vote against endorsing the road safety strategy. He came in for criticism from other members during the debate, but sticks by his stance. And there's more to this than meets the eye, says One MHK, about the rise in gate fees at the Energy from Waste plant. We hear from Onchan member Rob Callister. Tynwald received and endorsed the Road Safety Strategy last week. It sets out to reduce fatal and serious accidents by 40% through gathering statistics, enforcement of existing laws, and by education. The only person to vote against the document was Middle MHK Bill Shimmons. He wanted to see a raft of different proposals brought to the table as part of the strategy. He's been speaking to Tim Glover.
We had the Road Safety Strategy, and that contained a really positive vision, which said we don't want to have people dying or seriously injured on our roads.
40% target.
Exactly. So a really great initiative, and we have to accept that our road safety record is actually the poorest in Europe. So it's an area where very much welcome a new strategy, but it's based on the safe systems approach, which is a tried and tested method which has been used by the United Nations and is also in Scandinavia. And that covers safe roads, safe road speeds, safe road users, and safe vehicles. Now, unfortunately, in terms of speeds and vehicles, the Council of Ministers ruled out any changes, which actually means that the strategy, as it stands, is either hopelessly optimistic or, in my view, fatally flawed.
On that subject, you were pushing for a number of things with speed limits and MOTs, in effect. You were accused of trying to punish the many rather than looking after the few. You were accused of?
Well, I asked for explanations about how we got to where we were at in the strategy in terms of ruling out any changes to speed limits. And one of the things I was asking for was, why are we not looking at to extend the 20 mile an hour zones, which right across Europe you're seeing come into place, again, following best practice from the United Nations, from the World Health Organization. And if you look at the pedestrian casualty statistics that we have, The most likely people to be injured as a pedestrian are those under 15. So our children are most at risk. And right across the UK, you have seen urban areas listen to their residents who are concerned about this and say, actually, we'd like a 20 mile an hour limit. So that's why I was saying, why is that not in our strategy? So if you go to Liverpool, Tim, they have a thing called the 20 effect. And so Liverpool City Council has written out to all their residents and said, would you like us to reduce the speed limit in your area? And their strategy, their tagline is slower speeds, safer streets. So I would like to see us explore these options. And I think it's wrong to rule them out at this stage of any strategy, particularly as we have such a commendable goal in terms of eliminating deaths and serious injuries in our roads.
So, I take it you drove at 20 miles an hour to come up to Manx Radio.
Yes, I did. And you know,
because that's often a limit that isn't taken on board.
Indeed, and actually it's quite a dangerous road, particularly at the bottom of the hill there where you've got two rows of cars either side, and it's quite narrow because it's an old Victorian road, and many of the roads in Douglas are like that. And we have to accept that. You know, nothing we can do about that, and clearly there's no silver bullet to all of these situations. So speed limits are one aspect. Driver behaviour is another. And
that was a point, wasn't it? A big point was made. It's about education.
So education is one factor. But to a degree, it's to say, well, actually, there's a combination of things we need to do. So the evidence from elsewhere is very much that you need to do a combination of things if you want to change a culture. And this is cultural change that's needed.
Wasn't the point, though, that we don't have a lot of these figures and this strategy was going to be the basis of obtaining those figures and moving forward from that?
We have a lot of data and sort of a lot of statistics in the strategy. So just one final thing on the 20-mile-an-hour zones. So the UK Department of Transport did a very large survey on the implementation of these 20-mile-an-hour urban zones. So this is in towns where the recommendation is that where cars and pedestrians and vulnerable road users and cyclists are there with parked cars, 20-mile-an-hour zones reduce the number of accidents, serious accidents that happen. So they did a survey and 75% of local residents were very positive after the 20-mile-an-hour zone was implemented. So it's a range of factors. What my concern was is that we seem to be having a closed mindset to some of these tools at our disposal to tackle what is a very serious issue, which affects many people. And in terms of that statistics that you raised, we have quite a good data set. We're going to improve that data set, which is great. And I was delighted that the Minister has agreed, following questions with me, to publish that benchmarked against other places. And I think that's very important so we can measure how we get better at this. But at the end of the day, that almost sanitises what is actually something much more in statistics. Each one of these numbers actually is a life-changing event, and it's a tragedy for the people and their families. So we can talk about statistics all day long, but the impact of it is far, far greater.
A lot of members criticised you for the stance you took and the manner in which you addressed the court. It was, I'm right, you're wrong.
Well, I'm not sure that's how I would take the whole of the debate. Yes, some people were clearly unhappy, and cultural change is difficult. You know, I mean, it's we have to accept there are different perspectives on this. What I was looking at is an evidence-based approach. So I have many constituents who are very unhappy about speeding in their area. And if you look at the Isle of Man's Social Attitude Survey, that shows 55% of residents in Maloo, in Braddon, in Maroun, felt that speeding was a fairly big or a very big problem for them. And that's impacting people's daily lives. So whilst in many ways this is a controversial topic, it's a topic that we should be able to talk about. And we should not be afraid to have these debates. And so I was slightly surprised by some of the comments, but that's fine. We have differences of opinion. My view is we need to look at our facts, and some of the comments that were made were very anecdotal, and actually it's a much better quality debate if you base your views on facts rather than your opinions.
We've also had the survey out, the attitude survey about roads and cyclists and walking, and cyclists and walking were the two that there was more dissatisfaction about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that reflects the view of people that actually we are prioritising cars ahead of other more vulnerable road users. And, you know, I see that when I talk to my constituents. So I have people who are very concerned about their children being able to cross the road. And I know a couple of members in the debate actually said they were in a similar situation, if you recall, that they were having to drive their children to the other side of the road to get the bus because the road was too difficult for them to cross. I have a number of people like that in Middle. I also have elderly people who have to get the bus back, so they'll get the bus into Douglas to do the shopping, and then they get a taxi back because they can't cross the road outside their house. Now, when I talk to the Department of Infrastructure about these issues, they are incredibly reluctant to look at measures such as pedestrian crossings, reducing speed limits. Their priority is generally traffic speed, flow, and cars. We prioritise cars ahead of vulnerable pedestrians, ahead of our older people, ahead of our children. Now I'm questioning, is that right? Is that really right? Is that the culture that we want?
We're a long way from achieving another goal, which is linked in, of active travel, aren't we?
We are. We're making good progress. And,
but it's not going to happen without all the other constituent points being put in place as well.
So we know from the consultation on active travel that road safety was a key deterrent for people. They would very much like to be able to be more active, but they're concerned because they feel that the road is unsafe. So the active travel team alongside Sustrans, who are working really well with people here in the Isle of Man, taking a lot of views on board from the local community, which is absolutely critical, and I'd like to see a lot more of that taken on board in all aspects of road safety, rather than just a ministerial perspective. We should be consulting with the community and asking our residents, what do you really want? Because actually, when I talk to my residents, road safety, as a deterrent to active travel, is an issue. Road safety is an issue for them, which is actually blighting their daily lives.
Isn't it the case, just to finish with, that everyone that uses the roads, whether they're a walker or a cyclist or a driver, they've all got to up the game, haven't they?
Of course we have. We have a shared responsibility.
There's faults with everyone,
absolutely,
aren't there, at the moment, which need to go if the roads are going to be safer.
And I think what you were talking about there is actually slightly misleading, because most people who are walkers or cyclists also are drivers.
Yeah.
So it's simplistic to put people into tribes, and that's certainly not the case. We have a shared responsibility to look after for each other. And I don't see that at times. A lot of people are really great on the roads and really look out for each other, but there's a significant minority who are very aggressive and very uncaring. And you know, I don't see that if you go down Strand Street. If you see an older person going through a door, or someone with kids in a buggy, you give them time. You say, come on through, don't worry, don't rush. Now, you compare that with actually perhaps an older person who's perhaps driving less than the fastest speed permissible on the road, and people are all over them. They're driving very aggressively. So why is it that we change our mindset from actually we're in the street to when we're in a car? So I think we all have a shared responsibility. I think the Road Safety Strategy is a great initiative. It's the first time we've ever had one, which is incredible, really. But I think it could be a lot better. So it's an issue which is of real concern to many of my constituents. So I'm pleased to continue to raise it. And since I raised it, actually, since Tuesday, I've had people from all around the island contacting me saying, actually, I have the same issue. I'm in the north, I'm in the south, but I can't let my kids play out. Is that what we want?
Middle MHK Bill Shimmons. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. A 5.7% increase in gate fees at the Energy from Waste plant is unfair on local authorities, according to 1MHK, and shouldn't be taken at face value. The hike comes into force from the 1st of April and will result in charges of £91.93 per tonne for domestic waste and £183.04 for commercial waste. The charges imposed by plant operator Suez on the Department of Infrastructure, which it then passes on to local government, it's likely to place a significant burden on local authorities and, coupled with other pressures, result in rate rises. Well, Rob Callister says most of the costs which make up the gate fee are fixed and is therefore questioning the rise, which he thinks is unusually high. He's been discussing the figures with me.
Local authorities at the moment pay what they call a gate fee, and that gate fee is made up of several different elements, but most of those costs are fixed, and they're fixed until 2029. So, for example, there is the availability fee. Now, this is the fee for actually running the plant, and it's around £5.1 million per annum, less any electricity that's generated. In previous years, we used to generate up towards £800,000, £900,000, which lowered that cost. If we look at my Tynwald answer in this month, in 2017, the availability fee has actually increased to just over £4.5 million. So that tells me that the amount of electricity that's been generated in the plant has fallen. In addition to that, we also have the annual lease payment. That is a fixed cost going back to 2004, which is paid to the Isle of Man Bank, and that was due to a sale and leaseback agreement, which you may want to touch on later. But that fixed cost is £3.4 million. There's a thing called an indexation fee, and nobody really knows what that is, but it's very tiny. It's just additional cost that's added to the gate fee. But overall, what happens is you have the availability fee, which is fixed. You have the leaseback arrangement, which is fixed. If I take my answer I got back in January 2018, there's 50,000 tonnes of waste going through the plant, commercial and domestic. So you divide all of that, and then you come up with your gate fee. So approximately, if you use 50,000 tonnes as a guideline, based on under the user pays, that we could be paying £154 per tonne. And that is the same, that would be a fixed cost for commercial and for domestic.
And this comes in the backdrop of the 5.7%, well, it was called a gate fee rise. You may wish to dispute that by the way you've described what a gate fee is, but this 5.7% rise at the Energy for Waste Plan for local authorities. Now, why did you go in search of this information?
Well, it's a topic that I've followed very closely since being an Onken commissioner back in 2012-13. The previous minister for DOI, Phil Gorn, actually tried to implement a £21 per tonne increase over several years. So in theory, if the previous minister had got his way in April 2018, domestic customers would have been paying £161 per tonne instead of the proposed £91.93 per tonne. So there's a big difference there. My sort of concerns with regard to the 5.3% increase from April 2019, it really goes against what the Treasury Minister said in his budget speech last year. It clearly said within his budget speech that he was expecting government fees and charges to increase by 2%. So applying an additional 3.73% increase from April 2019 can be seen as nothing more than a stealth tax or the department trying to rebalance its own budgets throughout the year. Now, I'm not against an increase at the plant, but I felt that 5.37%, given the climate, is just too much in one year.
Just go back to the availability fee, which has gone up. Would it suggest that there's falling throughput at the plant? The reason they've had such a big increase, we're all recycling more, or trying to recycle more. Maybe less stuff is going through the plant, therefore there's an increase, a bigger increase than might have been expected.
Yeah, the Energy from Waste plant can accept anywhere between 40,000 tonnes up to 60,000 tonnes. That's the matrix of the plant. Based on the answer I got last January, it had 50,000 tonnes going through it, and the availability fee was £3.4 million. Now, that fee for 2017-18 has increased to £4.5 million. So that tells me that there has been a drop in the tonnage going through the Energy from Waste plant during 2018. However, I will need to table a question to the minister just to clarify that. I'm not saying there's a huge drop, but we do have to be mindful of the amount of waste that goes through the plant. It is a fixed contract till 2029, and it makes no difference if the people of the Isle of Man put 1 tonne through this or 60,000 tonnes. The availability fee doesn't change. It's £5.1 million less any electricity, and the amount going to the Isle of Man Bank under the sale and lease back arrangement will always be £3.4 million until 2029, at which time the plant transfers back to the Department of Infrastructure for a pound.
In looking at this rise and these fees and these figures, what is your view of the current state of play? You've been quite balanced in your approach to this, but I mean, is it fair on local authorities to be having to meet these fees without much control over the matter?
Well, I think there is a very strong argument. And if I was at a local level now, I'm not, but if I was a commissioner, I would go back to the original argument I said to the previous minister. Why should local authorities be paying back the annual lease payment to the Isle of Man Bank, which equates to £3.4 million, as I've said? If you want to break that down, we'll use 50,000 tonnes as a baseline. Then realistically, that equates to £68 per tonne added to the cost. And I don't think local authorities should be paying that. I really genuinely do. But if you want to add all of the costs, so if we take a step back and we go back to the original capital costs of around £44 million, if we take on board the availability cost to run it, then on my calculations, then local authorities shouldn't be paying anything more than a figure of £118 per tonne. Now, that is both domestic and commercial. As the press release from the department has said, commercial rates will be 0.04 per tonne. So it is clear that commercial waste continues to subsidise domestic waste. And plus, I think the department also subsidised a certain amount. So it's very difficult to get your head around all of this. So I think the department is funding an element of the plant. It's clear the commercial rates are also subsidising it. But there is an argument on behalf of the local authorities to say they shouldn't be paying the availability fee, because under law, the department and the government has a statutory duty to provide a facility for local authorities to use in order to burn their waste.
You mentioned the words stealth tax earlier in terms of the way this has been, perhaps the way this has been presented to local authorities and the public. Are the reasons for these fees explained properly by the department to the public and the local authorities?
I don't think that press release really explains it. They just said there was an increase in operational cost. As I've already explained, most of the costs associated with the gate fee are fixed, other than a tiny bit, which is the indexation fee.
Is it deliberately misleading, or is it just a confusing arrangement?
No, I genuinely think there is a number of elements to this. I think the electricity that's been generated from our waste has fallen. I think there has been some additional increasing costs. And I think it's also that the department is trying to balance its own affairs, because it is subsidising some of the cost. I think that was explained back in 2012-13. But overall, I think a 5.73% increase is just too much. And I still think there is discussions around that lease back arrangement. I don't feel that local authorities should be paying that. They weren't part of the negotiations. Mm. But they're being asked under the user pays sort of scheme that they should pay all the costs associated with the plant.
The sale and lease back agreement was reached with Arman Bank in September 2004. So a rent goes for each year £3.4 million there or thereabouts to the Isle of Man Bank. I'm finding it difficult to understand what the benefit of this arrangement is. It does seem an unusual way of sort of having the situation.
I think you're absolutely right. I scratched my head when I looked at this back in 2012-13. I cannot understand why, especially the Isle of Man government had finances in, you know, available just to buy the plant. Yes, charge the local authority for the original capital costs of around £44 million. I get that. But I don't quite understand. And unfortunately, different governments, different times, I can't explain why the Treasury Minister at the time or Tim Wood at the time felt it was the best solution was to sell it to the Isle of Man Bank for £45 million. And then expect local authorities to pay back around £89 million over a 25-year period. It did double the cost. So at a time when we're trying to look at ways, we've got a lot of debt attached to the Manx Utilities Authorities. We've got other debts, you know, pensions, everything else. To me, this is money we could have saved. Ratepayers could have saved. We could have encouraged more, and we could have actually touched a little bit more on our recycling strategy. The problem we've got is the policy was set very early in the 90s, but in 2004 the plant came online, and the island strategy was that we would burn our waste. Now that plant has got to be kept fed until 2029. So in my eyes, as much as I do encourage recycling and as much as I want to recycle, I've always got this in the back of my mind that we do have to feed this plant until 2029. So it does conflict against some of our green policies.
Well, how do we reconcile that? Because there'll be people, the more you recycle then as a local authority or organise recycling, the more you'll be having to pay the incinerator if you're taking throughput away. So what's the advice, I guess, from, I suppose it's not your departmental area necessarily, but what would I do as a local authority?
I think at the moment we're okay, because based on last year's figure, we've got 50,000 tonnes going through the plant. I think if that figure drops towards the 45,000 tonnes, I think we're going to have a serious conversation. And that may go against our recycling strategy. It may go against some of our green initiatives. We have to be mindful that this plant, the costs associated to the plant are regardless if we have 1 tonne going through or 60,000 tonnes. Obviously, when the tonnage drops, some of the other costs increase as well. We certainly don't generate the electricity, so the availability fee increases. So yeah, there is going to be a clash. You know, have we built a plant too big? I'm not sure.
That is one of the common sort of issues raised from members of the public, But you don't feel that, you're not sure on that, the case, whether it is simply too big a facility?
I think it was built at a time when the Isle of Man was economically really active with regard to building and other activities going on around the island. I think it has dropped back a little bit, but I'm encouraged. If we use that baseline of 50,000, I think that is a very good figure. We're just above the bottom figure. Yes, we could actually burn more, up to 60,000 tonnes, but 50,000 has always been a baseline. So I'm encouraged by that, as long as it doesn't drop any further.
Onken MHK, Rob Callister. Well, coupled with pensions changes and the impact of a pay award settlement, the rise at the plant is expected to hit bigger local authorities in particular, as Douglas councillor Richie McNichol explained to me.
It will affect everybody on the island, not only Douglas residents. We can't do anything about the rise. What we need to do is to ask the public to do more recycling and put less in their bins that go to the energy from waste plant. And that will save us money.
You mentioned it's bigger than perhaps was anticipated. Why do you suspect that is? Because it's been called the annual indexation charge, and there's different interpretations of what the percentage is when it goes up. But some have suggested there might be falling throughput through the site, which means the charges have to go up.
Which says that recycling is working and less packaging, but...
But you're also paying more, I suppose. Then.
It's a private company that's running it, Suez, and I presume that they control how much it goes up, the gate fee goes up, and not the government. Again, we have never been party to what the deal is between Suez running it and government owning it.
Douglas councillor Richie McNichol. Well, that's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week, and you can listen again to this episode via Manx Radio's website on-demand service, or again as a podcast. But for now, have a good evening.